I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. White actors in blackface and politicians embroiled in sex scandals with red faces. With us this week on our Bloggers Roundtable, we've got Brandon Whitney, who runs the blog Homeland Colors. He also writes about politics for the websites Black Men in America and My Voice DC. And Dwayne Brayboy writes the blog Black Informant. Welcome, guys.
How you doing?
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, we just heard from our political analyst about the big scandal. This one involves the once squeaky clean New York Governor Eliot Spitzer and his involvement allegedly with the prostitution ring. He resigned his position today. Now, in January, the Detroit mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, came under fire for having a long-term sexual relationship with one of his top aides. The Detroit Free Press then reported details of the text messages with his chief of staff. She resigned amid allegations that she and the mayor lied under oath about the affair. A new column from the Detroit News suggests these two cases share a similar kind of arrogance that empowered each of these politicians to take risks. So, Brandon, let me start with you. Do you see a parallel?
To a certain extent. I kind of take this personally because I grew up in Detroit. The difference I can see between the two guys is that Spitzer had the integrity to resign and Kwame did not. Detroit is in too bad shape. It has a huge infant mortality rate. The schools are in bad shape for Kwame to stay in power and not do anything to really improve the situation of the city. He just needs to step down. He's a terrible influence, and he hasn't done anything that Archer didn't do, which was the mayor before him, that is worth talking about. So he needs to just go.
Well, Brandon, you know, this article argued that Spitzer's resignation would essentially force Kilpatrick's hand. Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't think so. I find black leaders in America tend to be very similar to leaders in some African countries in that they hold on to power until somebody boots them out. So basically what probably needs to take place is Kwame's going to have to get booted out somewhere somehow.
Dwayne, is it time for a coup?
Yeah, I pretty much second what he said. I mean, it's Mayor Kwame, he's not going anywhere. And it's unfortunate that here you have Spitzer. I mean, the moment this stuff broke out, here you had like a few days later, now he's already out of the door, whereas Mayor Fitzpatrick, he's still, you know, he's still hanging around and want to do
Kill
a
Patrick.
Custer's last stand at the expense of the poor citizens of Detroit. So unfortunate.
And what's really sad about it is that a lot of people were excited when he first came into office. And I think the reason for that is that he was a younger guy and it seemed like he was going to bring a change. But when you compare him to a Cory Booker or you compare him to Donna Edwards or Barack Obama, he's fallen very much short.
Yeah.
I want to bring in Carmen Van Kerkhove. She's joining us now, co-founder and president of New Demographic Anti-Racism Training Company. She also blogs at Racialicious. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask you about Eliot Spitzer's wife and the look on her face. I mean... It's there's so much discussion of the stand by your man mentality, and we have a woman running for president right now who pulled a stand by your man. What price do you think that takes out of people who are caught on the other end of these sex scandals?
And by other people, you mean the wives?
Yeah, the significant others. I mean, who are almost always wives. Let's face it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really unfortunate because it really, from what I've heard, Eliot Spitzer's wife is a very accomplished woman in her own right. And in a situation like this, she's really just reduced to this silent partner just standing by, you know, with a sorrowful look on her face. When really you have to wonder, you know, what if she were in office, what kinds of things could she be accomplishing rather than just simply being a spouse?
Now, Brandon, some people have even argued that Senator Clinton's favorables and her electability could go up if she, for whatever reason, broke up with Bill Clinton. That is complete speculation, but I throw it out there in the sense that how are women perceived when they stand by a man who has done them wrong, a politician who's done them wrong?
I can't really say. I think it really depends on a person's point of view. I think some people who come from a more feminist point of view might think that she's being used as a tool to support her husband or something of that nature. But my point of view is just, you know, I'm not married to the person. I can't judge them. You know, whatever they want to do in their personal relationship is up to them. I'm more concerned with how it affects government and how it affects people's lives. as opposed to their relationship.
Dwayne, I want to move us on to another topic. Hollywood and the issue of cross-racial casting. There's a new Ben Stiller comedy called Tropic Thunder. Robert Downey Jr. plays a white actor who dons blackface to play a role that was originally written for a black man. Now, last year, Angelina Jolie darkened her skin to play the role of Marianne Pearl, biracial woman, French woman, in the film A Mighty Heart. Have you seen those pictures of Downey?
Yes, I have. Yes.
What do you think about how they what they achieved with the makeup, and then the larger issue of is this fair game in evolving America?
Right. I'm a huge Ben Stiller fan, so I know I'm going to be biased here. I think he can pull it off. The makeup, when I saw it, just that one slide that I saw, I thought they came a long way from the days of Soul Man or Soul Brother, wherever that movie was back
in
the
Soul
80s.
Man.
Yeah. I think this is – Hollywood does this stuff all the time. I mean, for example, I could think of two roles where Denzel Washington played – I mean, he didn't don white makeup, but he played a role that was originally intended for white actors, and that was in Pelican Brief. And in the other movie, Much Ado About Nothing, where he played a I think he was like a Spanish prince or something like that. Yeah. And I think this is – like you kind of alluded to, I think this is just part of America finally evolving, where we feel confident and comfortable enough to do these kind of things and pull it off without having to do a protest every time someone does it. I mean, we all have a sense. I think to some degree, we all have a sense of humor, and I think it's quite okay to do it. I don't necessarily see a problem with it.
Carmen, there's another spin on this, which is not when, white actors are playing people of color in makeup in a comedy, but also the question of what happens when there are fictionalized events based on a true story and they change the race of the people. There's another movie, 21, based on the book Bringing Down the House, about these MIT students who gamed Vegas casinos with their math skills. And the real MIT students were Asian, but they're white characters in the movie. Does that bother you at all?
It definitely bothers me. And as one blogger at Ultra Brown put it, finally you've got a movie about MIT math and gambling and they don't cast any Asians in it. I mean, it's really kind of ridiculous. One of the excuses that you often hear from Hollywood executives or producers is that there aren't enough good stories to be told that feature people of color. And so I think it's very significant when you've got a story like this, which turned into a best-selling book, which then is turning into a movie, is significant enough of a story to turn into a movie, and then yet they choose to turn almost all of the characters into white people. I think that that's really something that we need to be questioning as to why is that really necessary. I mean, if you look at the success of a movie like Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, granted that's in a different genre, sort of a stoner comedy, but I think the success of that movie shows that, the mainstream, so-called mainstream audiences don't need to only see white actors on the screen to be able to relate to them.
There was another case similar to this in the movie about 9/11, the Oliver Stone movie. You had a black Marine who ended up on screen as a white character, and there was a huge amount of outcry in some quarters of the black community just saying, this guy's a hero and he's from our community. Why can't you show him that way? Brandon, do you think that was griping or do you think that was a fair critique?
I think it's a fair critique, but I think the real problem is that there's a lag between corporations, and that's basically who runs Hollywood and a lot of other places, and the public. I think they're still holding on to this old paradigm where they think that if it's not a white main character, you can't sell it to white audiences. And I think the American people are a lot more sophisticated than that. Back on the whole thing with the blackface, I watched Soul Man yesterday just to kind of prepare for this. And the thing is, it depends on how they do it. My biggest fear is that some folks that get so excited about the fact that he's in blackface to a certain extent, that they'll put all their energy into something like Robert Downey being in blackface, and it might not even be anything that's severely negative, more important problems.
Let me just describe Soul Man for folks who haven't seen the movie. It's this movie from 86 with C. Thomas Howell as this guy who poses as black to get a scholarship to Harvard. Now, it was really controversial at the time. What did you think when you saw it again?
I thought it was a brilliant piece of satire. It was about a white guy who didn't realize he had white privilege, who dressed up as a black person and found out he did have white privilege and what life was like. And it was funny. And it was smart. And for all I know, that might be what this new movie with Ben Stiller will be. But I'm very afraid that we'll start getting IMAX-like protests, and they'll start focusing on this issue instead of stuff like the murder rate in Philadelphia or the unemployment rate in Baltimore. We get so caught up in these symbolic issues that don't make a difference to anybody.
Well,
but
if
the makeup was awful.
The makeup was pretty jacked. So if you're just tuning in, this is NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We are in the middle of our bloggers roundtable. And with me, we have Carmen Van Kerkhove. She's the co-founder and president of New Demographic and blogs at racialicious.com. Brandon Whitney runs the blog Homeland Colors. And Dwayne Brayboy writes the blog Black Informant. Now, I actually want to move on to, we don't usually do this, but we have gotten endorsement from you, Brandon. I wrote a post on our blog, News and Views, talking about ethnic pride among Black folks, whether that pride can be divisive. And I wrote the post after a speech I gave in Iowa. I gave this speech and I had dinner with some Black students, and a Haitian American freshman said that Haitians were better than Black Americans because they'd kicked the French out of their homeland. And then I asked her friend, a Black American woman, how she felt about her Haitian friend's comment. And the second student said she was hurt in some ways, but she understood. And she said, "Our pride gets in the way. Black people are proud people, and Haitians are proud people, and we should be proud of each other, but sometimes our pride gets in the way." So this year, particularly with Barack Obama having, you know, direct African ancestry through his father, and people talking about, you know, is he a Black American or an African American or language, and you have Jamaican Americans, Nigerian Americans, Haitian Americans. Do you think, Brandon, that there is a sea change in how we're viewing Blackness and ethnicity? And why did the conversation resonate with you? Because you actually posted a reply to what I had written.
Yeah, it kind of resonated with me. Mostly, I'm dating a Kenyan, and so I got a chance to really find out more about the ethnic differences among Black people. And what I've learned, and I used to drink Tuskers in college with a bunch of Kenyans as well. And what I'm learning is that the root of the problem of not being able to get along comes from two different things. One, it's a mutual ignorance of one another. African Americans and Americans in general know nothing about Africa because all you see is stuff on the news and the Discovery Channel. And Africans and people in the diaspora, all they see of African Americans is what they see on television, and we're mutually ignorant of one another. And in the United States, and the other part of it is just low self-esteem. Like, arrogance is a sign of low self-esteem. And Blacks, no matter where you are, if you're probably on the lower end of the totem pole in terms of class or status. And so to make up for that, we're often prideful and arrogant about our specific type of Black person. And I think that's probably what the root of the problem is overall.
How does your girlfriend see it from her side? Does she perceive Black Americans as arrogant?
No, she doesn't, actually. She grew up in both Kenya and America, and so she's been back and forth. So she can actually see it from both sides. We rarely bump heads on it. We're different culturally in a lot of ways, in terms of the way we view things. But luckily, we're both kind of open-minded. I've interacted with Africans, and they are the best folks to party with. And I enjoy the company, but I've also run into some cases where people make statements like, "Yeah, you're pretty smart for an African American," and a lot of that is really just ignorance about each other, and it's not all their fault or our fault, because we're seeing the images we see are always negative, and to be honest with you, America's never really bothered to really recognize the fact that African Americans, the descendants and cultural descendants of the slaves, have a unique culture. We're not just a race.
Let me throw you in here, Carmen. I mean, there's often a lot of attention to interracial issues, but this is an intraracial, interethnic issue. I mean, you know, and you know, if you go into Asian culture, you'll see divisions between Chinese, Japanese, Koreans, et cetera. If you go into any race, you know, the Irish and the English, you know, do we really talk about that in the U.S.? Should we be talking about it?
I think we're starting to see a little bit more conversation about that, and I really agree with Brandon about the fact that it's really a matter of mutual ignorance, because I think you see the same kinds of attitudes in terms of, well, because a lot of the, immigrants from Africa tend to be immigrants that have been in the country not too long. And you see the same kinds of attitudes among, I think, Asian immigrants and also Hispanic immigrants, where there's the sense of, well, look at us. We're pulling ourselves up by the bootstraps. We're getting it done. Why can't you get it done? And that really comes from a lack of understanding of the history of this country and really the role that institutional racism plays and white supremacy still continues to play. And so I think that that is another area in which more conversations and more mutual understanding needs to happen.
Dwayne, when you think about your friendships, do you have any instances where you get to talk about these issues with people you know who are Black but of other ethnicities?
The friends that I did have, you know, when I was living in Atlanta some years back that were African descent or Jamaican or what have you, I mean, we were just friends. I mean, it was something that never really came up. It was really not a big issue, you know, not at all. So that's my experience, but I can only speak for myself.
And I guess in the end, when you think about this, Brandon, what do you ever try to proselytize to your Black American friends or have your girlfriend reach out to her Kenyan friends and try to say, look, just give people, you know, other Black people who are different a chance? Is it ever the kind of thing where you have to step into a like leadership slash peacemaker role?
I don't think it's ever really gotten to that point. I think the best thing that you can do if you're a person who's a little bit more aware about the two different cultures is just ask questions. When people make statements, just how do you know is a great question to ask somebody. And to really, you know, the biggest thing is it's very difficult for us to learn about each other's culture. So you have to, I think, encourage people to find out more. I mean, if you're trying to find out about Africa, I've done it. Tried to do it online. It's pretty difficult to find something that's about contemporary Africa unless you're straight going up to the newspapers. And if you're trying to find out more about, the Black middle class or Black people, the African American middle class and people who are doing well, it can be difficult. So it's just a matter of, I think we need to really get the word out on both sides of the divide and just explain each other to each other.
All right.
Go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, we got to wrap up. Great discussion. Thanks, guys.
Thanks
a lot. Thank you.
We've been speaking with Brandon Whitney of the blog Homeland Colors. He was at our headquarters in Washington, D.C. Carmen Van Kerkhove, co-founder of New Demographic. She blogs at Racialicious, and she was at our New York studios. And Dwayne Brayboy of the blog Black Informant. He was at member station KUCI in Irvine, California. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org.